a lot of them are applicable, just maybe different viewpoints, but I'm looking forward to hearing Brother Jim's. Brother Jim.
Thank you. First, my wife, Sister Teresa Parkinson, sends love. My sister Marge Hagensick, also. Nancy Carey and the rest of the little San Gabriel Valley Ecclesia, and also the Los Angeles Wednesday evening meeting, send love to each and all here. Now, this is intended to be a talk on application. It may sound theoretical, but it should not be. Now, a speaker can only give half of a good talk. The rest of it depends upon you. And what makes a good talk is if the thoughts are remembered and they are put into practice and the speaker is forgotten. Now, when we want to look at things that are in the past, we can see them more clearly. Or we can look at things which are in the distant future, long after I've kicked the bucket, so nobody will be able to say you're wrong. Now, it's a bit more of a risk, though, when you want to talk about things that are applicable today, 2012, 2015, 2020. But, you know, even the turtle makes progress only when he sticks his neck out. So, here we go. Now, everybody who would like one of the handouts here essentially has the whole talk in front of him. But for those folks out in Skype land, we'll say a little bit that's on the sheet here, or at least similar words. We want to look at the seven last plagues, but we find them nested into the 10 plagues of Egypt, as well as in the 16th chapter of Revelation. So we should look at the overall picture of the Exodus briefly. It starts over here, and I'll try not to fall off the stage here. When Moses comes to Egypt, and then there's this little battle of Aaron casts down his rod, and the magicians of Pharaoh cast down their rods, and then Aaron's rod eats up the other rods, and then Aaron takes the serpent back again, and it turns into a rod. After that, we have three plagues, and they fall equally on the Egyptians and on the Israelites. And then when we get to Exodus chapter 8, verses 20 to 23, the Lord says, I will put a division between my people and thy people, Pharaoh, so that there be no more plagues in the land of Goshen where my people dwell. Now, for the first time, Moses takes the dominant role. It's no more say unto Aaron, thy brother, do this, do that, do the third thing. But now Moses takes the dominant role and the peoples are separated so that the plagues fall only upon the Egyptians and not upon the Lord's people. Now, briefly, Moses represents Christ. Aaron represents his spokesman, the church. The Israelites represent the Lord's people, however defined. Pharaoh, the one whose heart is hardened, represents Satan, and the Egyptians represent the people of the adversary. So now we come through seven more plagues that fall only upon the Israelites until we get to the last plague, which is the death of the firstborn. The firstborn, they were the ones that had the right of inheritance. So the Egyptian firstborn are destroyed in symbol at the end of this age when the kingdom of this world destroys itself and there's no more kingdom to inherit, so there's no more firstborn. That terminates them. But the firstborn of the Lord's people, why? That's the church of the firstborn. And by virtue of being complete and resurrected, they are no longer subject to death. Then they go 3 days' journey, 3 days out of Egypt, that a time when Satan has no more influence over them, or Pharaoh has no more influence over the Israelites. Okay, now we're in Christ's thousand-year kingdom. Satan is bound. Right now he may be bound and determined, but then he will be fully bound. And first place, Succoth. And the second place they come to is Etham, which is by the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord tells them to make a turn. Now, you've all brought with you a map of Egypt. Hold up your right hand. And you'll see the Nile River flowing down and forming the delta, except you have one string of green land represented by your thumb sticking out to the east. The Lord had told the Israelites, don't go out by the way of the Philistines, because if they go by the way the Philistine road, they are likely to go back where they came from. But there's only one other road out of Egypt, and that's due east. That's going along your thumb here. They go halfway out and they get to Sukkoth. Remember the Feast of Sukkoth in the fall? The Feast of Tabernacles or Feast of Booths. And then you get to Etham, which is by the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord tells them, you make a turn, go north, practically where you would have gone if you'd taken the Philistine road out of Egypt. And that lures Pharaoh into his own destruction. Day four, a Pharaoh is caught up with them, and the Lord's people are delivered across the sea. The sea level goes down, and the Israelites cross. Probably takes about 5 hours to do the job. Needn't take any more than that. And then when Pharaoh and his hosts try to do the same, along comes the tidal wave back again, and they leave them down in Davy Jones' locker. That's the end of them. And then they go, what they were called to do from the very beginning, 3 days' journey in the wilderness. Now you add up those 3 days to the Red Sea, plus one, and three more days, and you get 7 days, and that's the number of days for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or the Feast of Passover. So that Feast of Passover represents for us the thousand-year kingdom of Christ, plus the little season, plus the perfect ages of eternity. Now, we go into that somewhat in the studies, but now we're interested in the seven last plagues. When Moses takes the dominant role and separates between the peoples, that is, Christ at his return begins the harvest work of separation. Now, we'll note these seven last plagues in Egypt. Well, maybe we should take just a moment here to talk about the first three. The entire picture begins in chapter 7. And the first thing is the rod of Moses, or rather rod of Aaron. He casts it on the ground. I'm going to suggest a possibility. I haven't thoroughly thought it through, but it's a minor point. It may well represent the sacrifice of Christ in the church. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees might be represented by Pharaoh's magicians, and they cast their rods down too. They each become serpents, but Aaron's rod eats up the others, because we come to the first period of the Christian church, and the sacrifice of the church is shown, or rather the sacrifice of Jesus is shown as successful. And what happens to the doctrines and practices of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Well, in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed, Jerusalem was taken, and the Jews were driven out. And by 73 AD at Masada, the Jewish polity is no more at all. That's a possibility. Now, it may be that the three first plagues, before we get to the seven last plagues, would represent the overthrow of heathen Rome at the time of Constantine down to the time when the Odoacer and the Heruli overthrow and terminate the West Roman Empire. and that the second represents the Reformation, and that the third, which the magicians of Pharaoh could not duplicate, represents the carrying the gospel, the Bible, throughout all the nations of the earth. But then we get to a time when Israel starts going back to its land in the 1870s. I don't think we'll mention it much about the Long Depression at this time, but between the Long Depression and this fall planting of 1874, the miserable spring harvest in the Balkans in 1875, it created a domino effect which led to the Ottoman Empire declaring bankruptcy, and then at the Congress of Berlin, the Jewish Prime Minister of England could point out to the Turks, you need money? You got this no good land over in Palestine? You might as well sell it and get some money for it. And so the Jews started going back in October of 1874. Well, in the Exodus plagues, we have in order, number one, flies. Two, murrain killed the cattle. That's destructive. Three, boils and blains upon man and beast. Four, hail with lightning and thunder and fire that ran along upon the ground, destroying the first two crops of Egypt. That would be the barley and the flax. Then the wheat and the spelt had not yet come up. So we have to wait for a period of time. And then an east wind brings locusts into all the borders of Egypt to eat up the wheat and the spelt, which have now come up. So that gets rid of the crops of Egypt. And of course, it didn't affect the Israelites. So the Egyptians come to buy from the Israelites. And of course, we have wheat and we have barley to sell at a price. And then comes the plague of darkness. 3 days of darkness. So much so that no man could move from his place for 3 days. And then finally, the last plague, the death of the firstborn. Now, briefly, the Revelation plagues that correspond to the plague of the flies, it was poured forth into the earth. Corresponding to number two, the murrain that killed the cattle, it was poured forth into the sea. Number three, the boils and blains, corresponding to it, are the plague poured out into the rivers and the fountains of waters. Number four, the hail, that was poured forth upon the sun. And those last four are not intos, they are upons, for whatever that's worth. Number five, the locusts, that was poured forth upon the throne of the beast. Number six, the 3 days of darkness, was poured forth upon the river Euphrates. That's the river that went through Babylon, on which Babylon depended for its trade and its wealth. And the death of the firstborn, number seven, corresponds to the plague upon the air. Now, if we compare the Exodus plagues with major world events that have happened since the 1870s, the first one is the Long Depression. I don't think I was ever taught about the Long Depression when I was in school, but it was a big thing in that time. It began in 1873 and lasted into the 1890s, be a few years different from in some countries than in others as to when they came out of it. But there was an interesting movement that got started about that time, wasn't it? And the enemies of that movement were not flush with cash so that they could resist it. But that may well correspond to the ransom for all and restitution message. Now, that message sounds so wonderful that if Jesus Christ died once for all, then should not all benefit? But that message has one weakness as perceived by the world. It may be great for developing Christian character, But it's terrible for developing God's exclusive organization. You don't have to join us to be saved. What a horrible thought, as some would view it. However, the second of the seven last plagues, the murrain that killed the cattle, is destructive. Well, our next major world event was World War I. The boils and blains are not destructive, but they're painful, as was the Great Depression that lasted from, about 1925 to 1939. 1925 was when investment started declining, and by 27 and then 29, you have the stock market crash, and it lasted until World War II, which would correspond seemingly to the hail with lightning and thunder and fire that ran along upon the ground. One suspects that if you were in Nazi Germany at the time, you'd think that this was quite literal. And then you have the plague of the locusts. They were brought in by the east wind, and the locusts came in and they ate up the remaining crops of Egypt. And finally, a mighty west wind comes and drives the locusts all out of Egypt again. Now, what are locusts? Well, John the Baptist survived on locusts and honey, whereas the locusts were destructive to the Egyptians. Ah, I should suggest that perhaps the locusts represent tribulation, which is destructive to this world, but tribulation works patience, and patience experience, and experience the hope that leaves us not ashamed. That's good for John the Baptist. That's good for us. And what have we seen since World War II? We saw the Eastern communist problems coming into the West, and there wasn't a country that didn't have a strong communist movement. I can still remember at one time, back perhaps in the 60s, when the communists had gotten the elections from the Adriatic to the Tyrrhenian Sea and were threatening to take over Rome and all of Italy, and they were wondering, what can we do with the papacy? Move it to Ireland? That's a Catholic country, but Ireland couldn't afford him. America could afford him, but they didn't want him. What was the papacy going to do? And at one point, the Pope at the time says, the church seems fated to die. But now, we want to spend most of our time on this plague of darkness, because we're not so interested in just what has happened in the past. Now, it's true. The mighty West has driven communism out of power so that the Soviet Union has been replaced by the Soviet disunion. But our next plague is a plague of darkness, and it is upon the river Euphrates. This plague of darkness, so that no man could move from his place for 3 days, and the river Euphrates, upon which Babylon depended for its commerce, its wealth, dried up. To me, it sounds like a deep depression. 3 days? Does that suggest 3 years of deep depression? Well, now I am not wise enough to know, but I will certainly be watching. I am reminded of a cartoon from many years ago, and somehow it seems a little applicable today, where the knight comes into the king and says, the treasury is broke, sire. Well, then print more money. We can't, sire. Why not? There's no more gold to back it up. Whew. For a moment, I was afraid there was a paper shortage. Are we there? Now, without going into detail, each of these major world events has already benefited the restoration of Israel. Well, each has been very damaging to sectarianism. But we want to consider especially the plague that is appropriate to our day, which I deem to be number 6. What does it appear to be, and what should we be prepared to do about it? I'll just mention something from an 1883 article. That was 1883, the month of July, and page 7. The comment on it was, literal Babylon was built upon the river Euphrates. Its wealth, supplies, and sustenance came largely from this source. The millions of papacy's subjects of every tongue and clime, and this symbol shows that a dissatisfaction is to spring up between the subjects and the church authorities, which will turn aside her support and dry up her revenues, and thus lead speedily to Babylon's complete destruction. The drying up will probably require years for its accomplishment. Well, I think that seems to be the case, doesn't it? We already know that the economies of the world are teetering. They refer to the pigs countries, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Well, I won't spend more time on that. But the question is, what things should not surprise us if deep depression is the next major world event? Let's try to prepare for the following things. Now, if one studies the subject and sees that he thinks that deep depression looks like what's ahead, consider these things that we can do in preparation for it and in living through it. And if one studies it and decides, well, Brother Parkinson is all wet, then consider which of these things might be inappropriate, if any. I think we'll find most of them are still will be appropriate, but especially so if our next major world event is deep depression. 1. We may lose, we may go bankrupt, we may lose our homes, our life savings, all else for that matter. Is our hope in the goods that we possess? Can we serve both God and mammon? If our hope is in the goods that we possess, we can expect to be wiped out, because you cannot serve God and mammon. The mammon will fail. 2, as a result of people going bankrupt all over the country and the world, the governments may step in, seize control over things under the guise of, we'll save you. We'll give you jobs. All you need to do is give up a few of your liberties here. Or actually, it's mostly your neighbor's liberties, but then you don't need them anyway. That's already been tried. And the fellow's name was Adolf Schickelgruber, changed to Adolf Hitler. And that is where the Germans lost their freedom. They got their jobs, but they lost their freedom. If the governments take over practically everything, we may have very little to sacrifice, so sacrifice may become difficult. We may no longer have access to the modern technologies for witness work and for pastoral work, helping out one another. Now, perhaps on the plus side, there might be fewer worldly allurements for our children and the newly interested ones. That may be actually a spiritual benefit. Sorry about those folks whose life's work depends upon computers. But nevertheless, question, will fear replace loving kindness to again take Bible students captive? Again, We'll recall that it did at the end of World War I. We have been in danger of it at times since that time, but have not succumbed to it. But with the Great Depression, this world may attempt to blame the Jews for the Depression rather than accept the blame. Now, after all, if things go sour, a politician has two choices: blame himself or blame somebody else. And that's what this world calls a no-brainer. And who usually gets the blame? That's right, the Jews. Now, due to things that have happened in the past, the Jews have left Central Europe. They are still leaving Eastern Europe. Over 1 million have left, very much to the benefit of Israel. The last major concentration of Jews in this world outside of Israel is in the Americas. The States, Canada, and Argentina. You say Argentina? Oh, yes. You remember a fellow named Adolf Eichmann? That's where they caught him and shipped him off to Israel. So, yes, Argentina. So that could be the means by which the Jews will be caused to go back to the land from America. Now, at that point, with most of the Jews already back in Israel, that only leaves one more route of attack by Satan. And that's the one we read about in Ezekiel 38 and 9, which we have only a little time to even mention. But in Ezekiel 38, the first few verses give the alignment of the Eastern Bloc. We'll note Persia, or Iran, has been at gross enmity with Russia ever since the Massageti, or the Magogites, slew Cyrus the Great. Remember him? That's 2,500 years. Only in our day has Iran started to get back into good graces with Russia and vice versa. This prophecy of Ezekiel 38 could not have been fulfilled in those 2,500 years in between. Now, is it 2,520 years? I haven't given that any thought. Now then, the Western Bloc is shown in verse 13, Ezekiel 38:13, where it says, Sheba and Dedan with the merchants of Tarshish and the young lions thereof. We'll note in the Western Bloc, it's not the Celtic nations and their former colonies, the Americas, that are at the head, but Sheba and Dedan. They're listed among the descendants of both Abraham and Cush. That's Arabia. Arabia is to be at the head of the Western Bloc. As Brother Zano used to say, what is the spoil that they will go down after? Knock off the first two letters and you get oil. That only works in English, unfortunately. Now, here is the big thing. Here's what we want to focus on. Not on the intellectual concepts of the seven last plagues, but on what we can do about it and should do about it. First, if it is deep depression, then to prepare for it, there are two things we should do. Get out of debt and stay out of debt. Those two things. And there's a good reason for it, too. And that is, if we owe the world, can you just see how it will reflect badly on our Lord? If somebody can say, I could have gotten through that deep depression if it weren't for those Bible students that didn't pay me back. Now, if the world owes us, so be it. Let it be. We're not going to be taking that into the kingdom, are we? So if anybody owes anything, let it be that the world owes us, not that we owe the world. Second, if there's a likelihood that we will not be able to so freely use the modern technologies, including Skype, including jet airplanes to get us here in the first place, including the internet for communicating and getting the message across to the world, and maybe we won't even be able to have printing presses, let's use them to the maximum now while we still can. Three, let us witness to the extent that we are now able. And I think there's a good statement. There's a brother back there, I think, said something to the effect of always preach the gospel. Use words when necessary. The way we live our lives may be the only Bible that our neighbor ever reads. Four, even in depression, let's tell everyone that we are able, that Christ's kingdom is going to come to solve all this. Great leaders of this world cannot do it. But because Christ died once for all, there is nothing that any man can do to keep you out of the resurrection. And five, as respects the Jews, to the extent that we are able, let us encourage our Jewish friends now to go back to Israel, to make Aliyah. Well, it is easy to do so, and there is no threat to one's life in trying to do it. And if they are on the older side, perhaps to encourage their children to learn Hebrew and go to the land and let them support the land and its people as best they can for as long as they can. Now, there's a couple of additional things here we might just mention. There's something in the Exodus respecting Pharaoh's proposal of compromises. There are four of them. Two of them in connection with the first of the seven last plagues. You say you want to go 3 days' journey in the wilderness to sacrifice unto the Lord your God? Go sacrifice to your God in the land. Go sacrifice to your God in sectarian organizations. No, we're told to go into the wilderness to do that. Well, all right, you may go away, but go not very far away. It was back, starting in the 1870s, our brethren heard the call, come out of Babylon, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. Now, I acknowledge that anybody who heard the call back then, unless the plagues have at least started to be poured out, that would have been an idle threat to them. And it does not seem that the Lord uses that method. So, the second compromise, go not very far away. Well, okay, you can go ahead and leave sectarianism, but take the spirit of Satan with you. And look what happened when Brother Russell died. Not so good, was it? But then we come to this third compromise, which pertains to our own time between the fifth and sixth plagues there, of let the Lord be so with you as I will let your little ones go. Go ye now that are men. In other words, you old geezers can believe the truth of the Bible all you want, but when you die, let it die with you. I will take your youth away from you. Where are our youth today? There are some that are wise. There are some that are here. But where are most? The distractions of the world. There's one more to go, and that's the objection. Well, you may go, all of you may go, only let your flocks and your herds be stayed behind. In other words, you can believe the truth all you want, but I'm not going to let you sacrifice. Now, how many times is the truth movement likely to break up? It won't break up if we are vigilant. If we are not vigilant, it certainly will break up. We have two things to consider. One would be Elijah. Lot was only called to come out of the city once. Okay, so he came to the village, and then from there he had to go into the mountains. Okay, so maybe that's twice. Elijah was called to come out of the city three times. So, if we were called from the 1870s onward to come out of Babylon, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins. And having come out, then some came out, but not very far out, not coming out in spirit. And when Brother Russell died, they took over. If we are not vigilant, it can happen again. So let us be vigilant. Let us have the Spirit of Christ. Now, in this regard, we can look at ourselves. Now, it's a lot easier to see faults in others, isn't it? But sometimes if we see faults in others, it's time now to look and see, do I have a big fault? It's the difference between the mote and the beam, isn't it? One to watch out for is hurt feelings. My mother used to say, hurt feelings is usually synonymous with hurt pride. Another thing that we can see in others, so much easier than in self, people who control self the least are those who most demand to control others. Oh, I believe in Christian liberty. Everybody has a right to my opinion. When in doubt, dogmatize. We need to watch for these things in our own hearts, those temptations. We've done the best we can to see into the near future. Yes, it is risky, isn't it? But consider if these things given to us in the seven last plagues may help us to understand what is here now and what is coming, and let us think carefully about what we can do to prepare and what we can do during to bring honor to our God and His Son, Jesus Christ.